You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 471 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from separate locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion, Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks. And in honor of this week's episode, the greatest Seahawk of all time.
Without question, the Walt Jones episode. I guess I wouldn't say without question. I mean, obviously, Russell Wilson is in the debate about who the greatest Seahawks player of all time is, and has a very credible claim, among others. But
Russell Wilson is the most important Seahawk of all time. Walt Jones is the best.
You talk about the legacy of being a one-team player, the peak at which he hit, which was the spiritual MVP of the NFL in 2005. Both of those factors, I do think Walter Jones is the greatest Seahawk of all time.
The two greatest Seattle athletes in baseball and football happened to have gone to Florida State.
I guess
Cal
I
Raleigh.
Of course it is. Yes, I understood the illusion there. Yeah. Well, you know, you must be excited for Ichiro's Hall of Fame summer to be overshadowed the way it is.
By Cal Raleigh, yes.
By someone clearly having a much better offensive season than Ichiro ever did.
It's your illusion. That's a great point, actually. I had not thought about it. I saw the countdown.
Did I preempt a take?
No, it's fine.
No, I'm saying, like, that could be a take going forward.
It would be a take if so many players didn't have better seasons than him.
It's not that hard. You know what the actual bit is? Should I save it? Should I do it as a hot take at some point when you want a week off? Because I've got an idea.
Sure.
Okay. Well, that's not going to be the podcast. But since you mentioned Cal Raleigh, should we start with a toast to him? Oh, by the way, first off, I did make it through my illness.
Oh, hello.
Thanks to
everybody. Are we toasting to you?
Worried. I was not
a
in
toast
that...
to Kevin's immune system.
I was not nearly as bad off by that point in the illness as it sounded last week. But thankfully, I am now better.
I went and I never do this, but I like re-listened to a chunk of the episode just to hear, because I was like, I thought we were stopping. Legitimately, you tried to stop the podcast.
I did. That is accurate.
And I was just like, no, we're doing this.
We're powering through.
So,
which it's not like it was going to get better later in the week.
I was thinking about how funny that was of like listening back to that, where I was like, let me try something here. And
yeah, it worked. We're going to try it again this week.
Hello.
All right, so we are starting with a congratulations to Cal Raleigh, voted to start the All-Star game at catcher for the AL. He's the first Mariners All-Star starter since Nelson Cruz in 2015. Raleigh will also participate in the MLB Home Run Derby on July 14th. And this is a homecoming since he went to high school less than 3 hours from Atlanta. Notably, he told reporters that he's considering hitting from both sides of the plate in the Derby.
Wow, I love it.
I don't know the context on whether that's happened before, so I'll need to look that up, but love the idea.
Do you know the concept of how excited the Mariners are about his nickname being the Big Dumper and the peach emoji being the butt emoji that people use and the game being in Atlanta, Georgia?
I am aware, as a matter of fact, of how excited they are about
that. I will say Mariners marketing is more excited about it than any person has ever been about anything on the face of the earth.
Well, it worked because they got enough people to vote for Cal Raleigh for him to start the All-Star game.
Could be the MVP. Was it that close? Did they release the votes?
So the format now, as I learned yesterday, is that the two top vote getters at each position, or I don't know, I guess the top six in the outfield. I'm not entirely sure how that works.
They fight. Battle Royale style.
And Cal knocked out Alejandro Kirk, and therefore
I like his odds against Alejandro Kirk. He seems like he's feisty, but he's probably
like
got
Alejandro
like
Kirk,
six,
yeah,
7 inches on him.
True, he does not have the reach.
Fan, yeah,
does not have the reach. Alejandro Kirk, though, low center of gravity on that guy. Let me tell you. Anyways, the two of them were pitted against each other in the final voting. I do not believe it was close. I saw it was something like in the 70s for Cal to in the 20s for Kirk.
Alejandro Kirk's not as short as I thought he was. He's 5'8". I mean, it's not. I thought he was like Jose Altuve short.
Okay.
But Cal has like 5 inches on him.
All right, let's pause for story time here. We'll also semi-toast here. We did this last week, but to Lenny Wilkins.
Oh, no, 7 inches on him.
I was there for the statue unveiling on Saturday. Thankfully, I was well enough to attend that. And I look over to my left at one point during the ceremony, and I'm like, oh, there's Isaiah Thomas. And he just like is so nondescript because he was there by himself. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure at some point I must have stood next to Isaiah Thomas. I've interviewed him many times over the course of his NBA career, but it's like I had forgotten until I looked over, like, oh, I'm taller than Isaiah Thomas. So there you go. It was a lovely ceremony. Many Sonics legends in attendance got a chance to write about it for ESPN. So great time.
Statue looks good.
Yeah. As people noted, Lenny pretty thick in the statue, perhaps thicker than he was at during his NBA playing days. It was also amusing that he was depicted driving with the ball in his right hand, based on a photo from his brief stint at the end of his career with the Portland Trail Blazers, oddly. But driving
okay
right
with this statue, and now all of a sudden I'm mad. No, why do we have to do this, people? What? Who? Why? Why would you find a photo of him from the Blazers and not the Sonics? Who was in charge of this?
I don't know who was responsible for that. Apparently it was easier to sculpt than whatever photos they found.
Any photo from the Sonics?
I don't know. But Lenny famously left-handed. And so it was very funny. Spencer Haywood brought this up a couple of times during
his face looked pretty good. Because
it's really good. So it's the same artist. I don't know if we talked about this last week who did the, I think we did.
This is like the Archive 75. This, like, when I Google Lenny Wilkins, the same photo pops up two times in a row. It's like probably on, I think this is what they did. I think whoever was making it Googled Lenny Wilkins and they found the first photo that showed up. The amount of photos of Lenny on the Blazers that show up, it's like in the NBA photo store.
Huh.
They just didn't quite dig deep enough. Here,
I mean, it's just it's strange. It doesn't ultimately matter whatsoever.
I'm just gonna be like a little annoyed every
you know
time
maybe
I see
it's also because there's nobody around him in the photo, whereas like the most iconic Sonics photo of him, like the one from Wikipedia that comes up at the front, there is a defender, you know, with his hands near Lenny, so maybe a little harder to isolate him that way. But anyways, congrats to Lenny Wilkins. It was also officially announced. The Storm finally made that official earlier Wednesday that the Sue Bird statue will be unveiled Sunday, August 17th to join Lenny Wilkins on the West Plaza of Climate Pledge Arena. Friend of the pod, Percy Allen of the Seattle Times, did have that report on Saturday.
I'm for it.
There you go. Back to the
toast. Statues? Yes.
I do not, as a philosophical matter, believe in statues. But if you are going to do statues, you can do a lot worse than Lenny and Sue.
There we go.
Who both advanced past. No, I guess Lenny Wilkins never during his playing days did advance past the ALCS. But during his coaching days, certainly did. Congrats also to Storm forward Nneka Ogwumike, who was voted an All-Star starter. It's the 10th All-Star appearance of Ogwumike's career, putting her alongside all-time leader, the aforementioned Sue Bird, Diana Taurasi, Tamika Catchings, and Brittany Griner is one of five players to make double-digit WNBA All-Star games. So continuing to add to a legendary Hall of Fame resume and play at a high level this season. That's all I have for toast. I did want to highlight, I think, a couple of things. This came up on the Discord. Do you want to talk about Illuminati hotties coming to Ballard? I guess that's next week.
That came up on the Discord? I didn't even see this.
That is, yeah, it did. It just recently did. That's next week, but to give people a little heads up about this.
It's right there. Ballard Seafood Fest. I think it's going to be packed on the streets of Ballard.
I hope so. I sadly will not be there since I will be in Vegas for the NBA Summer League and the Hoop Collective Live podcast that evening. But,
if anybody comes, they should let me know on Discord. I'll be around.
There was already talk of a meetup.
There really?
Yeah.
I saw none of this.
Within the last 15 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well.
So now you know when the segment was recorded. The other thing I wanted to shout out is the return of Talking Taco Time is coming. It is scheduled. I want to ask the listener something. Is it important for me to get this out as a podcast on the 4th of July so you can listen to this as you're driving around during your 4th of July weekend? Let me know how much I should effort getting that up Thursday night or first thing Friday morning. So stay tuned. We've got a very exciting guest. So excited for that. It is the return of Chicken Caesar. I had a Chicken Caesar soft taco this evening. Can't wait to talk about it. All right, with that, it is not time for your favorite segment because we have the return of the search for Seattle's best cookie.
Hello.
Which took us this week to Temple
Not
Pastries.
An abandoned search anymore.
No, a paused search, but not abandoned. Which took us this week to Temple Pastries. After running Temple Pastries at pop-ups, Christina Wood opened the Central District location in October 2020 in partnership with Broadcast Coffee Roasters. And I didn't realize until I drove up to go to there on Monday morning before the start of NBA free agency that I had previously been to this spot. And do you know why I went there?
Why did you go there?
Because I was going to Quick Pack Food Mart to search for Seattle's best chicken, which
Got
is right
it.
down the street. And across the street is Woodshop, which that was an abandoned search, but was a strong contender for Seattle's best barbecue. So it is this two-block stretch is a real nexus of the Seattle's best searches from the Pelton cast.
I somehow got on the mailing list for Jack's Barbecue Catering. They sent it to me. They were like, does Votive need to get your catering needs or whatever? The amount of emails I've received from them about this, I'm just like, they would be out of Seattle's best barbecue. That is how many emails I've gotten.
Oh,
from them.
No.
They are going very national. There's Jack's Barbecues everywhere.
Do they not have an unsubscribe button?
I think they do, but it's one of those things where I'm like, I could just ignore this.
Okay, well, you can't complain about them sending you too many emails if you have that option.
It was a little excessive. I wanted to be like, hey, I like this. There just aren't that many people in Seattle. Like, we're not going to have cater of barbecue.
So it's still exclusively within the Puget Sound area, right?
They're expanding pretty quickly, though.
They do have a lot of locations now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah.
It's enough locations that I look at it and I'm like, I'm being honest, the quality cannot be as good at that point. I don't believe that any location could be at 7 locations and the quality can remain as high.
I'm more optimistic than you are. I have not been to Jack's in a minute, but the last time I went was quite good. Anyways, so this was one of the locations that was highlighted in Infatuation's questionable list of Seattle's best chocolate chip cookies. So definitely wanted to make sure. I mean, you know, it's not a cookie-centric place. This is a bakery. Their specialties are croissants and cronuts. So, you know, it's not necessarily the thing they do, but they have multiple cookies. We tried not only their signature chocolate chip, which has sea salt and cocoa nibs, but also, let me double check what the name was of the other one that they had. But it's definitely got fig in it. So do you want to start with your thoughts on these cookies?
You know, I didn't have them immediately. I had them at the end of the day when you brought them. And you had gotten them that morning, and then I had them later that night.
Right.
And I thought they were very good cookies. But to me, I'm looking at it and looking at the Instagram, and I'm like, I want to eat all of these other foods more than I want to have the cookie. And if I were to go to Temple Pastries, the chances of me getting a cookie there are 0%. Not because of the quality of the cookie. It's just I'm way more excited about the other pastries.
Right.
And so I think that's my main takeaway, is that the cookies were good. But if we were talking about Seattle's best bakery, I think it would be a completely different conversation.
A conversation we may have at some point in the future, without question.
Oh, I'm excited about these baked goods on here.
All of focaccia, I maybe would have taken a look at that. The fig and oat, I would say, you
the
know, it's not my
focaccia. I'm like all of these. I'm like pretty hungry.
It's not my favorite style of cookie necessarily, as compared to the chocolate chip. but I liked it better, I think, relatively than the it is technically a cocoa nib sea salt cookie. The consistency of the chocolate chip cookie wasn't exactly what I'm looking for. I would say it was like kind of like very classic store-bought chocolate chip cookie texture.
I
Now the
agree. I agree with that.
ingredients are
It's
way
neither
better.
crunchy and neither super
Exactly.
gooey. It's kind of neither. It's soft. It's like a soft baked cookie.
Exactly. And that's just not the texture I'm going for. The ingredients were top-notch. The flavors were on point, but the texture to me wasn't quite there to be a contender for Seattle's best cookie.
Chamomile bergamot donut. I'm just like, I want to have all this other stuff. So this is not even a statement about Temple pastries. It's mostly just about they do so much more than donuts or
Exactly.
than cookies. And I feel like that's how they should be judged, but not necessarily strictly in the cookie search.
Now
I'm
I'm
down for
seeing.
Seattle's best bakery because we've been to in this donut search some really good bakeries as well. And I'm like, I like cookies, but I also like bread.
I mean, bakery is so hard because it feels like there's so many different items to judge people on that you need to come with like multiple people to be able to eat enough different things to really get a representative sample. But it's certainly a consideration. And yeah, I was there on a Monday, but the weekend churro donut is definitely calling my name.
I'm happy we got back to it. I'm ready to go on cookies right now.
We have a couple more spots to get to, perhaps, but depending on when we're awarding Seattle's best cookie, whether there's a show at the end of this that perhaps has people in attendance, we might want to try and schedule at
I
some
really
point
am
here.
just like the weekends are very complicated.
Okay, well, we don't have to do it on the weekends. Depending on when we do that, we really kind of need to get into the bracket pretty soon here.
Okay.
And
To
possibly
every
already have
weekend.
needed to get into the
I
bracket.
feel like a winter show is going to be, or a fall show is going to be, there's, I don't know, a Friday night in the fall could make a lot of sense because the amount of end of the summer weekends that I am gone or have something else is all of them.
All right, well, we will continue to discuss this offline.
The summer filled up very quickly and then it becomes football season, but we could do a Friday night before some sort of like we could do maybe the Friday of the Ohio State game or something, the night before Ohio State.
It's an intriguing idea. All right, with that, it is now time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
So it's July. We're past the halfway point of the season. Mariners are 2.5 games up in the division. Coming off four consecutive series wins or ties. Cal is an all-star starter. We're at the beginning of summer and a four-day weekend. You'd think I'd be feeling pretty good about baseball right about now. Well, think again. Maybe I'm feeling a little anti-authoritarian after another week in America that felt like a decade, but I've given Jerry the benefit of the doubt for too long. He said the goal is to win 54% of the games over a period of time, and you know it would be helpful achieving that goal? Winning anywhere close to 54% of their games. The record has been in decline season over season steadily since 2021. Yeah, they're 2.5 games up on the third wild card spot, but they're one bad weekend away from being in Red Sox territory and completely out of the division, which they're 7 games back of an inexplicably great Astros team. And I'm starting to question whether Jerry Dipoto has actually done anything good since the end of the playoff drought. I'll give him Randy Arozarena.
Cal Raleigh's extension.
But you know who ruled? The 2022 Seattle Mariners. And that is why I'm here to propose, Jerry, do the funnest thing possible. Take a page out of Pete Carroll's playbook, because who loves our guys more than us? And let's bring them back. Let me remind you of the Mariners' top 7 in WAR from 2022. Julio, Cal Raleigh, Logan Gilbert, J.P. Crawford, and Eugenio Suarez, Sam Haggerty, and Ty France too. But Jerry, do you want to know what kind of roster would absolutely crush in 2025? A roster with Julio, Cal, Logan, J.P., Eugenio, and Sam Onofrio Haggerty. Get on the phone today and bring these boys home, Jerry. We know them. We love them, and they're mashing on their current teams and expendable to them. Look, I like Ben Williamson and Cole Young, but do you want to know what I like more? 26 homers before the All-Star break from Gino and a respectable 721 ops from Onofrio. I think we'll be fine without Ben and Cole's occasional seeing-eye single when we're staring down a lineup that legitimately would have no holes. Get on the phone now, Jerry. Because you can have a time machine. There is no rule you have to wait until the deadline. The Cal playoff clincher. Julio on the 4th of July. Winker in LA. Haggerty with a better win percentage than Ichiro. The playoff win in Toronto. We loved those Mariners. They were our favorite team since 95. And guess what, Jerry? You can bring them back with two phone calls and restore our love for baseball in Seattle. And maybe, just maybe, even the Mets will part with Luis Torrens and we'll be fully whole.
All right, that was a nice touch. I feel like Carlos Santana maybe needs to be part of this plan as well.
This is not even a hot take. This is an actual thing the Mariners should do.
I don't think that the Rangers are partying with Haggerty.
There is a price, and I bet the price is not that high. I bet the price is not as high as you think it is.
People are excited about Lias Montes and all, but you know, would I give him up to get...
That is not the price that I'm talking about, but...
I can't give him up to get Haggerty back. You're right, I would. Yeah, I mean, Gino does seem like a plausible option here.
It is time.
Like, I don't even think of, like, why would they need to sacrifice Cole Young? Like, he's playing...
I'm not talking about trading Cole Young.
I understand that, but Haggerty would be playing the Master Buoni role, or frankly, if we're all being honest with ourselves after the month of June...
Dylan Moore
role?
Goodbye.
So...
I will say there are a few things that I've learned about baseball. I said this last week. It takes time for baseball players. Dylan Moore, we'll probably figure it out. But also, we have enough of a history with Dylan Moore to understand the type of player he is. He's probably not going to get way better. He's probably not going to be as bad as he played in the month of June. The other thing about it, though, is that Ben Williamson and Cole Young are not Major League Baseball players right now.
I don't agree with that. I think Cole Young is playing well lately, isn't he? Am I missing something?
Cole Young is playing fine if your standards are 606 OPS. Like, that is just not...
That includes 54 the start of his career when he really struggled badly. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, anyone, you know, if you throw out the bad games is good, but, like, he was at 053 through his first six games. Since then, this is not including tonight on Baseball Reference, he's hitting 320 with a 728 ops. So I do not care to hear your Cole Young takes.
All right, Cole Young will be okay with. But like, there's a reality about Ben Williamson is that Ben Williamson is a good defender. Gino Suarez has 26 homers.
Again, no one is arguing your point here.
We can let Ben Williamson marinate in the minors. The other thing was they waited way too long. Like, Jerry was fucking around with Emerson Hancock. They wanted it to work, but the Mariners, I think they were 1-6 in his last seven starts. These are important games that I know that they want it. Like, Hancock is older.
We're doing pitching wins now. That's what we're doing. I agree. He has not been pitching.
Do you want to look at the other stats? Because they're not good.
But I still think, you know, it's like the last three starts where he has been really
his
poor.
FIP
the
fact is that like they lost six,
in a
five,
game in 11 innings
six.
Against Arizona, that he went five innings and allowed two runs. Like, that's not on Emerson Hancock.
Sure, but his FIP is 5.6. Like, there is Emerson Hancock right now. I was wrong. I'll admit it. The Mariners are at four aces at the moment. I'm willing to believe Logan Evans might be ace number five. And when the Mariners sent down Emerson Hancock, it was like, yeah, because he's pitching like shit at the moment. Emerson, the difference for a pitcher, a starting pitcher, Emerson Hancock might be awesome in 2 years. I'm willing to accept that. But this moment, the Mariners need these wins. They're not in an amazing place right now. Just being in the playoffs as the playoffs started today is not the place that they should be. The roster is too good, and they've scored too many runs. Cal has been too good for this team to be sitting around. That's why they need to make a move right now.
I mean, he had a six-game stretch between May 17th and June 15th, so basically a month, where his FIP was 4.33. I think you're being a little too dismissive of how well Emerson.
You're cherry-picking his best stretch, and the FIP still is not.
I'm not saying that he shouldn't be. I mean, for 2025, I think that standard is pretty good for your number five starter, who's only there because of injuries. I don't think that Logan Evans is
worst on the roster,
and. I hope that Logan Evans is going to be better, but I don't think it's like going to be night and day here. You're not calling up, you know.
It's a little bit of Jerry's. It's a wish casting from Jerry. They've been a little bit right. They've been a little bit like Solano. Obviously, has been amazing from whatever the arbitrary time period is that people.
You got to see him hit cleanup. Was that tonight? He hit cleanup.
Yeah, I didn't see. Solano hit cleanup. I think Randy was hitting cleanup when I was there.
Oh, maybe he was hitting
cleanup. He was hitting cleanup.
Randy Arozarena, the first time in his regular season career, Mariners PR helpfully points out that he has homered in three consecutive games. He did it during the 2020 ALDS when I first learned who Randy Arozarena was. Very exciting time.
I'm feeling a little bit the. Rain delay. I do think that the rain affected them in Minnesota, but those two losses were kind of brutal. Eking out the wins in Texas was good, obviously, that they did it. But there's something, the Mariners are just, things aren't quite clicking completely right. The roster is too good to be in the place that they're in. Pythagorean record is not, they're dead on, right? They're not unlucky. They're not lucky. They are exactly where they should be statistically from this point. And it doesn't quite add up to me. And I think it's because we've been told over and over and over again how amazing this pitching staff is. And maybe you were on it earlier where you were like, the pitching staff is not actually as good as we think it is. The word historic hasn't come up all that much this year. But like,
I mean, you are still keeping an aces count and it still is pretty high.
The aces count?
Yeah.
Some of the pitchers got to start pitching like aces though.
I agree.
For them to count as aces. I mean, Castillo is one where, like, I'd not throw the word ace around, but, like,
it's going to be kind of interesting. So, Logan Evans is coming up. He will start on Thursday. The rest of the rotation will slide back a day. I think it was Brian Boo was scheduled to start and will now go Friday. I'm going to be very curious how the Mariners line up after the All-Star break in terms of the pecking order of their starting pitchers. Very curious about that order.
I mean, I think it's Gilbert, Wu, Kirby, Castillo, fifth starter. Whether the Mariners see it that way, I don't know. But
that is the question here.
Who among those, where do you feel like there'd be a disconnect between,
I certainly think they still see Kirby as their second best pitcher.
Ahead of Wu?
Yeah. I mean, even though he's not performed as well this season. And I think there's also probably an element where they still do want to reduce the stress on Wu. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's an element in how they handle Gilbert, too, frankly.
Yes. So. I'm not actually worried. Like, Kirby's at negative war for the season. That's just not going to continue. Kirby probably is going to have a monster second half. He's going to get comfortable. Like, his stuff still looks amazing to me. And it almost doesn't click with why it hasn't been working as well. I mean, his whip's still pretty freaking good.
Your order was the FIP order, for the record, for what that's worth.
But also, even looking at the bullpen, I'm like, they've kind of got like three amazing relievers and then even some other, like, it all seems like it should make, this team looks like it should be, the record should be better than it is. And the Astros look like the record should be worse.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think the Astros are massively, like, statistically outperforming.
Their run differential is very good.
It just doesn't quite make sense. And that's partially why, if I'm being honest, I think that the Astros are going to have a skid. I said this a few weeks ago. And the Mariners are going to continue playing well and are probably going to go on another run.
But now they're at the point where they have opened a big enough lead that they can go on the skid and still be in first place. So that's what's happened here.
I mean, they're like the third best team in baseball. You know, like they're chasing a team
What was the
They're chasing a team that is way better than the Astros were last year.
Where's the Mariners' biggest AL West lead last year? Do we know?
10 games, wasn't it?
No way.
They were up 10 games. You don't remember this? And missed the playoffs.
Oh, yeah,
it was in like fucking
games.
June. What are you talking? It was like very notable that they were up 10 games and missed the playoffs.
I don't remember that number specifically. So yeah, I guess you can use up that cushion. They were up considerably. They used it up by this point last year.
I actually don't know about the run differential. I think the Stros are massively outperforming the run differential.
They were up two at this point last year.
The third best record in baseball. And they have the...
Yeah, but ordinal ranks aren't necessarily that relevant.
Eighth best run differential. That's pretty big. I don't know. Can you find what their Pythagorean record is?
Their expected win-loss is 48 and 37. So I guess they're three games ahead. I wouldn't consider
those
that
three games
massively
are a huge deal to the Mariners, though.
I mean, are they?
Kind of.
Maybe at the end of the season they will be. But for example, like the Yankees are six games below their expected win loss. That I would consider massive.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're in the 100-plus run differential. But
Cleveland is outperforming its run expected win loss by five games. You know, it's not as practically
important. Wow, and
they're
still bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, it's an amount, though. I'm still have faith in this team. I like all of the players, if that makes sense. Like, I like Ben Williamson, but it is also a place where
you can like someone and think they should not be starting. That's allowed.
And he could be part of, you know, the Mastroboni role, right? Like, he could be part of a rotation. And Gino can DH.
He can't be, because the point of Mastroboni is that he plays every position in the infield and outfield.
I feel like Williamson could play other infield positions.
I'm sure he could play some others, but
he was a shortstop. He's a good enough defender at third that I'm like, he could play elsewhere. Let me just say, if I were Ben Williamson, wouldn't it be a bad situation to develop into a role player? Like, his bat is
not.
He's young. Obviously, there's time for a lot of these players, but his bat is not you're going to have a steady job at third base somewhere type of bat. It's more of a you have to find your way out of the field.
His glove at third base might be good enough.
It's not quite an important enough position to warrant. And also,
I'm just saying,
Gino's a good defender as well.
Well, again, this is not an argument about that particular trade. This is an argument about if your best skill is your defense at a specific position, adding versatility may not help. Being worse at other positions, but being able to play them may not be that helpful. I don't know. I'd rather the other guy, Dylan Moore, moves around to accommodate
to another team,
Williamson, rather than the other way around. Maybe
I've just
the Rangers.
Never been a Dylan Moore guy. Like, I earlier this season when he was hitting well, I was like, maybe I was wrong on Dylan Moore. But
he's always reminded me a little bit too much of Willie Bloomquist. There's no thought of his own.
Dylan Moore is just...
Or Willie Bloomquist.
He's honestly had some very good moments and has statistically been pretty fine, but like
outstanding season statistically last year.
Something about I just don't trust Dylan Moore. Also, Ben Williamson kind of won the game today, so
it was a great moment. Do you have any other takeaways from the game you attended?
It's really freaking hot. I'm anti the 6:40 start when it's like 90 degrees out and have tickets in center field. It was untenable. Big
you know
center
you're
field.
Allowed to move around.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. We sat right under the fireworks in right field. It was pretty fun. We were in like basically the last row.
There you go.
The games are so fast now, too.
Yes. Except for the game that I attended with Luca.
Oh, yeah. It
took 4 hours.
There was no alarm that went off.
No. No. So rarely happens.
Seeing Cal Homer, it was definitely. Here's what I'll say. I did the He's Up take a few weeks ago. It's true. Like, yeah. We were walking around. We were going to go get... The ice cream places were packed. Because, again, it was very hot. But, like, Salt and Straw had such a long line that we turned around and got Dippin' Dots. And when we were walking to Salt and Straw, Cal was up. And I was like, we need to pause and stand behind a section or whatever and watch every single pitch to Cal. And then he hit the homer, and I was like, it wasn't, nobody was arguing against me doing it, but it was like, yeah, that's why we're doing this. And it was pretty cool to see the angle of that ball coming down and like getting over the fielder's head and everything. So it is definitely true. Like when Cal is up, and also that game when it was Randy was up next after that, when he was looking to hit his third homer, it was kind of like, we've got to watch every pitch to Randy right now. I didn't say the same thing for Ben Williamson, but.
Also, maybe didn't say the same thing for Julio. Shall we get into the roundup?
Absolutely, we should.
Are you ready to take the reins?
Absolutely, I am. It's host Tristan. Starting with the Kraken, the NHL draft was last Friday. The Kraken drafted Canadian center Jake O'Brien with the number 8 pick, then loaded up on defensemen after that, taking them with their next 4 picks, including American Blake Fidler at number 36, whom Kevin's ESPN colleague Rachel Dory described as a first-round talent in grading the Kraken an A-. Free agency also started Tuesday, and Kraken signed defenseman Ryan Lindgren to a 4-year, $18 million deal. The 27-year-old played his entire NHL career with the Rangers. I was like, I recognize that name a little.
Oh, no. That seemed like a great sign. I mean, obviously, you're probably paying more attention to the goal scorers.
It was like one majestic playoffs. Before a deadline trade to Colorado, he projects on the second or third line, could be particularly useful on penalty kill, having ranked second on the Rangers with 2 minutes and 42 seconds average time on ice on the kill per hockeyreference.com. Adam Larson and Jamie Oleksiak, the only Kraken defenseman who averaged more than 118 time on the ice shorthanded. They also signed goalie Matt Murray to join Joey Decor and Philip Grubauer in net. Spent most of last season in the AHL with the Toronto Marlies, which is a team. The Marlies?
Yes.
Named after?
I forget the story. I have been to the arena.
Jacob?
I have been to the arena. No, it's not spelled the same. I've been to the arena where the Marlies play because they did some all-star events there in 2016.
The Kraken had the opportunity to buy out Grubauer for the 2/3 of his remaining contract of $10.1 million, but declined to do so. And then it's some bad news. The Kraken did buy out Joe Valeno, who we discussed last week.
Is Italian. They're named after the former Toronto Marlboros to avoid any potential association with the similarly named cigarette brand. MLSE uses the abbreviated form. Is the team's
official nickname. So they're not affiliated with the cigarette brand?
They are not.
Why were they way cooler when I thought they were?
They were named after the original version was named after the Duke of Marlboro. So there you go. It always goes back to royalty, in monarchy in Canada. You also didn't have this since I added it after I sent you the notes, and you didn't load the updated one. Ahead of the draft, the Kraken traded their 4th-round pick to the Minnesota Wild for center Freddie Gaudreau, who's known for his two-way play. His 18 goals last season were the second most of his career. Gaudreau is age 32 and carries a $2.1 million cap hit through 2027-28. So Kraken adding a lot of depth. Not necessarily a lot of star talent, but certainly a lot of depth.
I know stuff. I see where we freed you up. the Sounders last week with a 2-0 win versus Austin FC. After a frustrating start, Jesus Ferreira scored in the first half stoppage time, and Danny Musovski doubled the lead in the 54th minute as the Sounders kept a clean sheet despite losing Reed Baker-Whiting to a second yellow in the 89th minute. Austin FC managed just one shot on goal, though expected goals actually ended up pretty close in this game. 2.1 for the Sounders to 1.7 for Los Verdes. Jordan Morris saw most action since April, entering in the 75th minute. Sitting at 5th in the West, albeit tied in points per match with LAFC, with 2 matches in hand. I've lost you in the notes here.
The Sounders will now host one of the top teams.
I don't feel like this is good. You're better at doing this than I am.
Yeah. It turns out last week was a fluke. Sounders will host one of the top teams in MLS on Sunday when the Columbus Crew visits.
It sounds so much more natural when you talk about boring things.
Don't tell Reddit. They're 4th in the West with a plus 7 goal differential led by 9 goals from Diego Rossi, having his most productive season since he previously played for LAFC after a 2 years before his 2 year stint abroad.
We'll always have that one half of the episode when we decided that we should change things. We were like, how many years have we been doing this podcast? 13?
Well, we haven't done the roundup for all of that. You actually paid attention to the Sounders for a long period of time. We even had discussions about them.
God, the time period's over.
In the Sounders annual business meeting with Alliance members, majority owner Adrian Hanauer shared that MLS and MLSPPA, the MLSPA, have reached a deal on the FIFA Club World Cup bonus structure that was obviously so controversial that we've talked about a lot, while expressing some degree of regret for his locker room tirade after players wore the FIFA Club World cash grab t-shirts. If there's one thing I've learned through this process, it's that if anyone can become a pariah more than a millionaire athlete, it's a millionaire owner, Hanauer said, per Sounder at heart. It was not a proud period of time. I pride myself on the relationship I have with the players and have done so for 24 years. It's been done and dusted. It's behind us. I suspect that they aren't happy and some of the owners aren't happy. That probably means it ended up in some fair range.
It's a little bit like the noting the millionaire athlete and the millionaire owner, which partially some of these Sounders are not millionaires.
Absolutely. I will say, like, Adrian Hauenauer is not Steve Ballmer. He's not, you know, the late Paul Allen, but he is definitely wealthier than the players.
I'm not weeping for Adrian Hanauer. I mean, I like the...
Didn't say you should.
The element, I mean, these are always terribly wrong.
What?
It's AI, you're gonna do the estimate? AI response says he's the father of Chip Hanauer.
Does it?
No.
I would believe it. I would not believe that he's the father of Chip Hanauer. I would believe that AI would think that. What do you
worth got? Somewhere between 250 million and 500 million.
I mean, just I.
That's like imagine having that many million to have that be the range.
I'd be curious how much of Adrian Hanauer's wealth is strictly due to the Sounders. Like, he certainly did invest in them in the right time. Moving on to Seattle Reign FC, three Reign players started Sunday's 4-0 USWNT friendly win over Ireland. Lynn Biendolo, Jordan Bug, and Sam Meza, with Meza earning her first cap with the full national team. Biendolo, wearing the captain's armband for the first time, opened the scoring in the 11th minute. She and goalkeeper Claudia Dickey started Wednesday as USWNT beat Canada 3-0 in another friendly, with Meza playing off the bench. In the wake of Meza's USWNT debut, the Reign announced a three-year extension for her through 2028. The North Carolina product is age 23 and has started 9 of 13 matches for the Reign during a breakthrough second in campaign.
Thank God we quit that era of me hosting. That was terrible.
Seattle Storm have lost 2 of 3. Well, we're just going to move past it. You know, it's done and dusted. Seattle Storm have lost 2 of 3 since we last podcasted. They gave up 94 points to the Indiana Fever last Tuesday, despite Caitlin Clark scoring a career low 6 points on 3 of 13 shooting before being sidelined for the last week or so here. That one did look a little better after Indiana, granted without that kind of scoring, went into Minnesota and won the Commissioner's Cup on Tuesday night without Caitlin Clark. But
has Aaliyah Boston kind of taken the next level?
Yeah, I mean, she's an all-star starter, deservedly so. No-brainer pick.
Caitlin Clark?
I mean, this season, yes. In general, no. She had 31 points on 13 of 18 shooting against the Storm. Kelsey Mitchell had 26 points, some big threes in the fourth quarter. Storm did bounce back Friday to blow out the lowly Connecticut Sun 97-81 in a game that wasn't that close. Storm led by 27 through three quarters, and Dominique Malinga had a career-high 11 points in 20 minutes. On Sunday, the Storm suffered their worst defeat since 2023, losing 84-57 to the Golden State
Holy
Valkyries,
shit.
Dropping to 0-2 against the expansion team, which is now above 500 this season. Storm shot just 27% from the field, including 6 of 28 on threes, gave up 31 points on the third quarter as things got out of hand, or outscored 20-4 on fast break points and 46-18 in the paint. So that was a tough one to.
Did you just, you started hosting again and you started getting sick?
my throat has gotten a little dry this late in the podcast since we've already recorded the after the pod, obviously.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm
Wow.
breaking the fourth wall here. The Storm are still fifth in the WNBA standings at 10-7, albeit only a half game ahead of the Valkyries. They are headed east this week. They'll face the Atlanta Dream on Thursday and the New York Liberty in a Sunday matinee.
So I think the thing is, you should never get too excited when a team is playing well. As we were at with the Storm maybe a week ago, 2 weeks ago, and probably shouldn't be as down as we are right now, although Valkyries are the kryptonite for them.
They very much are. Do not want to see them in the first round of the playoffs.
Playoffs? No. So there's a long season still to happen before then, but that's not going to be very good for the old point differential, huh?
No. Although again, the blowout win over Connecticut did help pad things a bit. All-star reserves will be announced soon after the starters were announced, and the Storm should have two players, I would expect, in that group: Skylar Diggins and Gabby Williams, which would be her first all-star appearance. We have both of them on our ESPN All-Star teams.
Yeah, they're still 7-3 in their last 10. I think the Storm are fine.
They are fine. Yes. But definitely a bit of a reality check. Like, one of the things was the Storm were like crowing a little bit about their 3-point shooting. And it's like, those things have a way of evening out over time. And
They personally were.
I'd like you, Noel Quinn, I think, because of the fact that they've been so maligned for their lack of 3-point shooting when they were leading the league in 3-point percentage, was happy to. I mean, they're still second, but they have come back
In
to earth.
3-point percentage, but
Yeah.
they just don't take that many.
They are ninth in the league in attempts per
Okay.
game. But
It's not
the
terrible.
no, I mean, the interesting thing here is like we kind of assumed that the Storm were going to be pretty good this season, largely because of their defense. Gabby Williams is having an amazing defensive season. Eze Magbegor is one of the league's best rim protectors historically. Neko Gumake is a very good, versatile defender. Skylar Diggins plays all defensive caliber, style on the perimeter. They brought back Alicia Clark, who's, one of the most experienced and versatile defenders in the league. And they're seventh in defensive rating. Like, honestly, they've been much better offensively despite loss of Jewell Loyd. They're only sixth, relative to the rest of the league in terms of rankings, it doesn't sound that different. But, I think they are considerably better than league average on offense and not much so on defense, which
I
has
think
been an interesting development.
the most important thing is just looking around the WNBA, right? So Jonquil Jones is out for the Liberty.
Yeah, they are on a slide.
But
They've also been playing with Leonie without Leonie Fibich. They will have presumably her back by the time the Storm play there on Sunday, now that Eurobasket has concluded.
if the Liberty are one Jonquil Jones from being a 500 team, that's not a great place to be in for them. And
Well, it's basically as soon as I wrote the story that they might be better than last year.
really,
Oh,
that's how it
yeah,
works.
immediately.
We didn't even talk about NBA. I feel like that I want to talk about the WNBA for 1 second. But there's, I assume, like betting favorite is probably still the Liberty, I would guess.
The market has never been quite. Yeah, probably, because the market usually been on too high on Vegas, if to the extent they've been too low on the Liberty, not necessarily Minnesota, but
How many teams make the playoffs?
eight.
I mean, there's a legitimate chance that Vegas is kind of struggling to make the playoffs.
Yes, I mean, they are only a half game up on a playoff spot right now. I
There's.
think one of these teams is going to fall off.
But there's a.
By the way, the best news for the Storm remains that the LA Sparks are 5-12. They lost to Chicago on Sunday. The Sky, after their dreadful start, and despite the Courtney Vanderslice injury, have now passed the Sparks. They're a half game up. Dallas Wings also playing much better. They're 4-6 in their last 10. They are a half game back of the Sparks. So a lot of, they still, the Sparks have gotten healthier. They may get Cam Brink back at some point here. I haven't really had a lot of updates, but the chances of the Storm getting a lottery pick from the Sparks are looking better by the game, I would say.
Okay, here we go.
Are you looking up
The
the
Liberty are
betting?
like +130 in that range, +110 for BetMGM, and the Lynx
Okay.
are +260. So it's close, but The Storm plus 3,000.
But I see them at plus 2,200. I see different numbers for all of these.
Where are you looking at?
On the website.
Which one?
ESPN Bet.
Okay. It's still a pretty wide open WNBA at this point. There's not a clear favorite. I saw the ESPN one too. I clicked on the Vegas Insider that has kind of like all the different ones aggregated. But like,
gotcha.
There's not one, there's a handful of teams that are favorites. I mean, they still have the Aces fairly high right now, but could the Storm sneak in there? Could they get hot? It's still unlikely, but it's not unheard of.
I think the semifinals would be a great seed. If they win a playoff series for the first time without Subert and Brianna Stewart, that's a great season for them. That's what we should be targeting.
Sure, that's fine. But I'm just saying, it's not since kind of like the peak Vegas run. The Storm, there's less of a clear favorite. A plus 10,000 for the Valkyries. I mean, come on.
What do you think? Chance.
It's kind of tasty money, isn't it?
I mean, given the reasonable, I mean, they're above 500. Yeah. Atlanta is the team that is way undervalued at plus 2,800 to me.
Okay. I'm still feeling pretty fine about where the Storm are at right now, short term and long term. I think that they've handled this quite well.
One thing to watch, Dawana Bonner, I don't know if this has happened by the time we recorded last week. She worked a buyout with the Indiana Fever, I guess. And is a free agent. I haven't heard anything specifically linking her to the Storm, but perhaps would be a consideration, and she would be a massive upgrade to their bench if they somehow added her, even, you know, at her age.
Apparently the Valkyries and the Dream cannot be parlayed together.
To both win the championship, or are you saying one of the?
I just clicked on both. I was trying to do the yeah. Should do it like an either or bet.
Well,
I bet $1 on the Valkyries.
You know who's an either or? Is the pair of UW men's basketball players participating in the FIBA U19 World Cup in Switzerland. Hannes Steinbach is putting up monster numbers for Germany, averaging 18.3 points, 13 rebounds through four games. He's shooting 75% on twos, 40% on threes, is second in the competition in rebounds per game. Incoming freshman recruit JJ Mandiquit, averaging 6.3 points, 4.5 assists for the much deeper U.S. team, ranking second on the squad in the latter category as part of a roster that features AJ DeMonza. Both teams 4-0 heading into the quarterfinals on Friday, with the championship game coming up on Sunday.
I mean, obviously, we got to be excited about Hannes Steinbach. This is the most exciting UW German basketball news since Detlef, obviously.
What about Patrick Femmerle?
This is
Patrick Femmerle erasure.
That's fine.
These do have a surprisingly good German tradition. Obviously, with Schrempf and Christian Velp. It's been a minute, but Patrick Femmerle was a fixture on the German national team alongside Depp for a long period of time. Depp didn't play that much necessarily. I don't know if it was alongside him, but he was a fixture for a long period of time.
It's one of those things where, like, I'm seeing this with college football right now a little bit. As you see the stories, people are a little bit slow to realize what's going on. And there's not a lot of talk around UW basketball, but we're going to start seeing it over the next like 5-6 months, assuming everybody stays. But over the next 5-6 months, I mean, we're getting close to the season at that point. But like, people are going to start doing the thing where they're like, you know who's a sleeper for me? And it's going to be UW basketball a lot in this time period. And this right now is the most excited I've been about a UW basketball team since I literally can remember, right? Maybe since Lorenzo Romar.
I don't know. I think you were probably pretty excited when they were winning the Pac-12.
That we're talking about it in July, though?
I agree. Yeah, it's bizarre. Huskies also made some schedule news. They agreed to a home-and-home series with Baylor. They're traveling to Waco this season before hosting the Bears in 2026-27. A surprising tie between these two teams, who previously played to start both the 2019-20 and 2020-21 seasons. That was a big win in November 2019 in Alaska.
Yeah.
I feel like there was there a UW football game the same night? That's my vague recollection of that. But I'd have
That
to go look it
sounds
up.
kind of right,
We
but
were
I don't.
definitely at the famous Cousin Katie's for the, or no, maybe we were at your house. We were at one of those two houses.
And we
I
turn
know
on
I watched it in
after.
Fairwood, Washington.
There we go.
The Seahawks officially signed cornerback Shaquille Griffin. Oh, did you have more in UW men's basketball?
I don't, people are, it's starting to, this is a UW football thought though, but I'm obviously being fed this. People are starting to understand who Damon Williams is.
Oh, I guess
And
we should have mentioned in here. Maybe that could have been a toast for winning whatever the passing competition was at Madden Academy. That certainly got him some attention.
I, it's like he's like hipster pick right now for like great young quarterback. There are bigger names out there, but people are really starting right about now. I think when the college football video game comes out, I'm so fascinated to see how good he is. But if he's like a dominant runner and passer, I don't think they could accurately portray Damon Williams just how good of a passer he is. And I think people, that's the one thing that people don't understand about Damon. Like I saw him win that and I was like, of course he did. Right? He is underrated at this point. But we're in this month. I don't know if you saw that there's an NFL game in the month that we're in. I'm sure you must hate that information. But
What do you we no, I'm not processing that information.
think hard about it. There's
I don't
not a
ag
regular season game,
I
but
understand. I don't agree with that information.
the Hall of Fame game is in the month of July.
Don't accept it.
So it is coming. Winter is coming. But
The sun is still setting at 9:30 on the coast in
no,
Jim.
it's like we're in the very beginning of summer, you know. 4th of July,
It's not
like
even summer in Seattle, technically. The weather-wise, this has changed maybe, but historically, it
I
shouldn't
was
be
gonna say,
until
explain
Saturday.
to me the word technically in that sentence.
I'm sorry.
It's not summer in Seattle, technically.
Historically, Seattle summer does not begin for real until July 5th.
Somebody was asking me about that. About, oh, I was on the talking with somebody from California, and they were talking about how they might want to move to Seattle. And they were like, have you noticed that it's gotten hotter? And I was like, oh, yes. It has definitely gotten hotter earlier and later in Seattle. But as we get closer to it, I think people are starting to learn a little bit about Damon Williams. And I will say, I will mourn, of course, as time passes the summer and the sunshine. But the closer that we get to seeing Damon play football again is going to be exciting. Every little thing, just like take us to Damon.
So the Huskies, that game was November 8, 2019, the game, which was played in
Was the Baylor
Anchorage.
game.
Yep. Huskies won it 67-64. That was Baylor's only loss through their first 25 games of the season. They then lost at home to number one Kansas. They finished that season 26-4, ranked number three in the KenPom rankings. This was the core of the team that won the national championship the following year, that beat the Huskies by about 1 million points the next year in the season openers between those two teams. Still a
Was there a football
perplexing.
game? Was there a
I
Husky
mean,
football game that day?
there was a Husky football game that day at Oregon State. This is a game that you may famously recall was famously like preempted like the entire first half on FS1 for, I want to say, car racing. I don't know if I have the time to go
I
look up the
sort of
story.
remember that.
I mean, we were streaming it, so we didn't notice the issue because we're not the age of the median UW football season ticket holder. I mean, we are actually probably, but
Getting a lot closer to
oh no, you're getting closer every day. Huskies won this one 19-7 in Corvallis over Oregon State, a 7:30 p.m. Friday night kickoff. Oregon State did not score offensively in the game. Their only touchdown came on a touchdown, a pick six on one of Jacob Eason's two interceptions in this one. But the
it was
Huskies,
that season. Okay, I was trying to remember which season it was.
oh yeah, the Huskies still won it comfortably, getting 174 yards on 25 carries and two touchdowns from Savon Ahmed. They
Oh,
held Jake
Savon.
Luton to 88 yards on 19 of 28 passing with an interception.
Shooting
An interception from Elijah Molden.
Luton.
So good times. Two sacks from Joe Tryon Shoyinka, one and a half from Edifuan Ulofosio, a half from Levi Onzorike. This defense, it's like, oh, all these guys are in the NFL.
Was that? Oh man, those Jimmy like defenses.
They were mean.
They were awesome. This team was slightly underrated by me overall. They had some annoying losses. Was that Colorado game? Were we driving to Portland while that happened? The Colorado game that they lost the next weekend?
It definitely was not. Yeah, that sounds right. We were not paying close attention. This is... no, well, that wasn't... No, maybe I'm thinking of the...
There's some Colorado game that I listened to on the radio driving to Portland.
I think you're thinking of the game where Sam Heward started in the 2021 season. It's probably the game at Colorado you're thinking of.
Fair enough.
This one, I think, was... Huh, it was late on a Saturday night. I don't... Oh, I was there. That's the reason I don't remember watching it. I was fucking there.
Wow.
It was cold. Eason did not play well. But
this team
did...
wasn't terrible. The Oregon loss was Justin Herbert, right?
And this was the game where there was the pass to the very good receiver, LA Rams.
On which team?
On the Huskies, Puka Nacua.
Okay.
There was a fourth down pass.
Oh, and
he was probably
it?
Interfered with.
Oh, there was a pass.
And they did not throw a flag, and the Huskies lost. Puka Nacua did have a 33-yard touchdown catch in this game. Eason, 23 of 30 for 289 yards, 3 touchdowns.
In my head, Puka Nacua only played the COVID season in Seattle. But he was gone by then, right?
No, I think he was part of the
he
team
played
for COVID
that,
season
that
as
season.
Well. And then
I don't even really remember him from this year. Oh my God, I'm still mad about that. I distinctly remember there are a few moments.
We walked
Herbert
into this game late because
in this game.
We were at a break. No, I mean, he was 24 of 38, but
he sucked
four
early
touchdowns.
On. Early on, Herbert was not playing well, and I remember yelling at Herbert from the East End Zone back in the olden days. And
Huskies did lead it 28 to 14 early in the third quarter after
oh
the Nacua touchdown. And they scored a Peyton Henry field goal. Was their only score the remainder of the way. Oregon had 3 touchdowns, including the go-ahead score with 5:10 to go.
If we'd freaking... I'm still mad about this loss. I could care less about that Colorado loss that you were at, but this one, I distinctly remember watching Puka Nacua get pass interfered with and then not throw a flag. And we were in like... It was at like the 30 or something. It was like a 4th and 5 at like 30.
Yeah, I can remember where we were, that it was on the other end of the field from the East End zone. And then
right.
I mean, we played number 9 Utah pretty tough the next week, losing 33-28.
That one again, no recollection of.
I feel like you weren't at this game, but maybe I'm conflating
no,
it with something
that
else.
That's a different, I'm sure I was there. There was some other Utah game that I wasn't at, but.
Tyler Huntley, 19 of 24 for 284 yards. Zach Moss,
I wasn't at the Utah game
for 100 yards.
2 years ago.
In 20. Oh, okay.
That they won where what's his name? Dropped the on the pick, dropped the ball.
Oh, yes. Who was that? Memorable moment that. All right. Do we want to talk about the Seahawks now?
Much rather talk about college football.
They officially signed quarterback Shaquille Griffin, brought him back to Seattle on Wednesday. To your point, it's not just Pete Carroll. The Seahawks still love bringing guys back. Per my colleague, Jeremy Fowler, it's a 1-year, $3 million base with a max value of $4 million. Griffin will turn 30 later this month. He last played for the Seahawks in 2020 before signing the big contract with Jacksonville as a free agent. Played just 19 games over 2 seasons for the Jaguars before being waived. Split 2023 between 2 teams, then landed in Minnesota last year and played basically the same role he's competing to play in Seattle this year. He started just 3 games, but played 50% of the snaps with our old friend Byron Murphy Jr., speaking of those Jimmy Lake defenses, in the Devin Witherspoon role where he toggles between outside corner in base lineups and then the slot when they play the nickel.
I'm for it, obviously.
Yeah, I mean... You know, there were other veteran cornerback options here, but Griffin, you know, he doesn't have knowledge of the scheme anymore because obviously it's different under Mike McDonald, but knowledge of the organization, familiarity, all of that seems, if it's close, you may as well bring back a guy who is a very popular member of the team.
Yeah, I love Shaquille Griffin.
So, there you go.
The amount, if you had to rank right now how much you care about Seattle sports teams, what would your ranking be?
Storm number one, Mariners number two, Sonics number three.
Oh, that doesn't, you can't count the Sonics. Sonics number three. I'm talking about in this very moment right now, not like overall.
Yeah, I know. I guess UW football number four, and then maybe the Seahawks. I don't know. What's your ranking?
Do I want to know? Damon Williams gets a ranking of his own, of course. I care about Damon. I've only cared about two players ever this much. Early Russell Wilson and Damon Williams. I've never cared about a player this much. Maybe I'll say since the 2000s. Like, I don't really remember the feeling around, like, Griffey and A-Rod and stuff. But, like, or, yeah, Durant we weren't even that excited about. And the Sonic stars, like, they all
weren't that excited about.
I mean, we were excited about Durant, but it was always with the, like, the...
It was never like, oh, man, we're going to get to watch this guy for the next 10 years.
Yeah. And, like, Richard, it took him so long to get good that there was never one moment where it was like, now is the time. And Ray Allen came, like, kind of fully formed. So, you don't agree with that?
I think that Ray, very quickly in his time of Seattle, it showed that he had more to offer than what he had done in Milwaukee.
It was just different. It's different when you watch a player
without
grow
question.
Up versus.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
Okay, so the Huskies, like, Husky football is still number one. Mariners are number two. I guess it's, I'm not watching the Storm that much, but I do kind of care about the Storm, like, on an emotional level. So, hydroplane racing, of course.
Oh, yeah, I didn't throw that in there.
And then the Seahawks.
We were talking earlier about how I don't really like water activities. I like sitting by the water and just looking at the water. And it was making me think of why I like hydroplane racing, because I get to do that. And then occasionally there's boats racing on it.
Oh, I wanted to add this on that note. Thanks for listening.
You went back to hosting?
No. I wanted to add something from the post, from the end talk. But I was going to say I was at BMX races over the weekend, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. And the thing, partially because I was in Eastern Washington, you'll hear more about that later. The thing that it reminded me about the most, or of the most, was hydroplane racing.
Huh.
It's like a little annoyingly organized. You're hot, sitting under a canopy, Eastern Washington. And it's like 95% just sitting and waiting for like 1 minute of action.
Yeah.
And then you sit there. Right. It was like literally, if I closed my eyes, it was as if I was on the Columbia River.
Oh, but you didn't feel that cooling breeze blowing off the Columbia.
That is true.
You did. We weren't staring out at the Blue Bridge.
I'm not saying that it was as good as being in a hydroplane race, but the experience was all it felt kind of exactly the same, being at hours and hours of BMX races. And also, you're just like, good God, can time pass faster? You're like, can we just hurry up? We have to do a break now. And the same with the hydroplane racing. It's like, the water is fine. Just put the boats on the water, people. Another air show.
Not today. I learned from Wikipedia that the Blue Bridge replaced the Green Bridge.
Ah. That's important information about colors of bridges in Eastern Washington.
On that note.
Oh, we have to do it again. I feel like it's become excessive, the amount of on that notes that we do now.
Oh, it definitely is.
You know, we're really just 13 years in figuring this podcast out.
Well, we tried to figure it out again, and then we unfigured it out. It turned out the first 13 years we did have it right.
Yeah, we had it right the whole time, except for like an hour of post-podcast talk. I can't podcast with two Kevin Peltons.
I mean, last week you podcasted with zero. So, you know, maybe it would even out.
Felt weirdly natural podcasting just by myself, though.
You're going to do it Zach Lowe and Bill Simmons style? Just do monologues?
Zach Lowe, Bill Simmons? Does Zach Lowe, he does monologues at the beginning of the podcast?
I think he did an entire monologue podcast over the weekend, I do believe. Do you have after the pod talk?
Do I have after the pod talk? Yeah, of course I have after the pod talk.
Well, now it's after the pod. Let's talk.
Wow. First off, I have a perspective about Richland, Washington. I have two perspectives
I
on
mean,
Eastern
I
Washington.
have a perspective about Richland, Washington. But I was not there last weekend, in fairness. So I have
So
not been there in years.
I think it's kind of Walla Walla. I hadn't been to. I technically went to Walla Walla one time before for Mumford and Sons, Gentlemen of the Road. Imagine explaining that to children. But I'm
How to talk to your children about the fact that you once went to Walla Walla to see Mumford and the Sun.
no,
Mumford and the Sons?
that's not even what it was though. It was more just like explaining the concept of a traveling music festival that goes
Right.
to Walla Walla and Mumford and Sons are headlining it. It was a little bit like, I also we were driving there and I told them about, I was like, oh yeah, the only time I've ever been to Spokane, we were driving across the state and Ozfest was happening at the Gorge. And I was like, there was a traveling metal festival that was called Ozfest. And it was happening that day while we were traveling across the state. So times have changed across the country, but that was the one time I went to Walla Walla before. I will say Walla Walla, I think it is lovely. And in my rankings of east of the pass towns, Ellensburg is just fine. Walla Walla, way ahead. And I think Walla Walla might be number one for me right now.
How much time have you spent in Yakima?
I mean, we've driven through it a couple times, but there's no way that Yakima is nowhere near as quaint and lovely as Walla Walla is. Come on. Not a
Wow.
chance.
But what is
Not a
Walla Walla
chance.
the Palm Springs of?
The children noticed that when we were driving. We stopped at the Taco Bell in Walla Walla. I will say there were people protesting on the street of Yakima, which I was happy about. So we
Nice.
honked our horn for them in support.
Downtown Spokane is in fact quite lovely, having spent several weekends there over the last many years.
Not a fan for obvious reasons, but
And the Gonzaga campus. Say what you will about their men's basketball team.
we've been listening through to the Sublime record, Sublime. All rippers, if we're being honest. I hated it for so many years, and then I was like, the Frat Bros had it right. I was wrong. Turns out it happens occasionally. It was like, I'm sure this is a thing that is dead now, but it was like every college party circa 2005. That was the record. It was like only about 10 years old at that point. It just like reached the exact peak for frat bros to listen to
Critical
it.
mass.
But April 26, 1992, he calls out Eugene, Oregon in it.
I had forgotten that or not known that.
Yeah. There's also some parts of April 26, 1992 that I'm like, ignore this part.
Right.
Half of this I'm like for. The other half I'm like, he was a little bit off base there, but you know. The intent was okay.
The heart was in the right place.
So anyway, Richland is like weirdly. So I what I was looking for, I was in Walla Walla and I was like, I knew that the children wanted to get pizza. And I was like, I'm not interested in eating Domino's or whatever. And I was like, I want to find similar to what I would do for a baseball tournament, like a local burger place, just like a small burger place or something, which as we know in Wenatchee, there's an amazing one, right? That's kind of what I was looking for.
That's Zips, right?
I think that is Zips in Wenatchee. Yeah. I haven't been there in forever,
Where's
but I love it.
Wenatchee in your East of the Pass power rankings?
I think it's fine. I think Wenatchee's okay. The problem is some of the towns are like Yakima's a little too big. Walla Walla is small. Maybe there's a population threshold because I feel like you lose a little bit of character, like Yakima Wenatchee size. But so I'm looking for, I just looked for burgers in Richland. There's not a single highly rated, just like small mom and pop corner burger place in all of Richland. It was shocking to see. And every single restaurant that came up in Richland was Gray's or whatever. And I'm like, this is not what I'm looking for. Richland, how are you not? Because I looked in Walla Walla and there were like five different options of the exact place that I was looking for. But I was like, I'll be fine. I don't need to go in Walla Walla. I could get on the road to Richland before this, and Richland could not provide for me. what I was looking for in terms of a small burger place that had incredible burgers. Because they're all like, you look anywhere along the I-5 corridor.
I mean, Miners in Yakima, famous for this.
It's a little too big, but yes, I would be okay with Miners. I would have been fine with that. Miners is like semi-sit-down, right?
Yeah. What? And you had like an allergen experience there that
wasn't... I would be fine going there. Luca didn't. I didn't care. He wasn't eating his food.
Can I ask an important question, though, to go back a little bit? You started with this saying, the kids wanted pizza. And then you were searching for burger places. So I'm a little confused.
They got this was for me and Killian. They got pizza. Okay. But I was like, I don't want to get I don't want to eat Domino's. I want to find something like this. So anyway.
Okay. I thought you were going to look for like a local pizza parlor, which could be fun as well.
They were getting Domino's. That was
set. Did you get Spud Nuts?
No, I actually really wanted Spud Nuts though. The timing didn't work out for me to get them.
Okay.
I saw Spud Nuts like I was looking on Yelp in Richland and I was like, damn, I could go for a Spud Nut right now.
Is always invented by a Pelton. We are going to be in Kennewick next month. So
is there a Spud Nuts there?
I don't know if there is, but it's not that far from Richland. I'm sure we can figure it out.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of us there. One of us can go get Spud Nuts.
Here's my take on Richland, Washington.
Do you think we could get the famous cousin Katie on the pod?
Absolutely not. She'll never. She'll be in her hometown. Maybe she'll be a little bit more comfortable. But here's my take on Richland, Washington. It is somehow things directed at Latin American people because it's Richland, Washington. And also, it is like Portland circa 2010.
That seems baffling to me. I'm very curious to see this when we get there.
Pull up Yelp and it's just like, what is going on? Who does Richland, Washington think it is? However, I literally went and I was looking for I was like a dessert or something and coffee, something like that. And right there by the Holiday Inn on the river by IHG, which is as amazing as I thought it would be, was a coffee stand parked on the river that is like bookstore / coffee stand. And the person who I assume is the owner of this had, no shit, I swear to God, a giant Portland mustache. It was awesome. I'm not even complaining about it. The dream of the 90s is alive in Richland, Washington, somehow. I mean, saw him and I was like, he was like, how do you do, sir? He's like 28 or whatever. And he was like, getting us a broken. And he's like, dare I ask how this happened? And I'm like, dare you talk like a person from 2025? You dare not, because you're in Richland, Washington, which is somehow Portland in 2010.
Wow. Minus the Blazers, I guess.
I need to. They might move a team there. The Tri-Cities Americans, they had Russell Wilson.
Playing for the Dust Devils, of course, not the Tri-Cities Americans, who are a hockey team. Be very impressive if Russell Wilson played for the WHL team in the Tri-Cities.
Three-sport athlete. So, okay, the other thing was, it's funny that I do this around the 4th of July.
Can I ask a Walla Walla question to go back for a second? Because the Russell Wilson sort of transitions to this. How many signs are there advertising home of Drew Bledsoe?
Not a one.
What?
It's too cool. That's what I'm saying. Walla Walla. See, here's the thing. Richland wants to be cool. It's almost like Seattle and Portland. I don't know, call Seattle Portland or Seattle cool. I apologize for that. But like, Richland is trying to be something, just like the state of Oregon is. You know what I mean? The state of Oregon wants to be something it's not, in the same way that Richland wants to be something that it's not. However, I did respect this man and his mustache. This is not a complaint necessarily. It's more of an observation. Walla Walla just is, you know? Walla Walla has everything that you want. Like that downtown, I was pretty pro. All of a sudden, I thought to myself, maybe Whitman College isn't that bad. I think they might have an okay baseball program.
This is reminding me, there's some sort of beach city in the Northwest. I thought Oregon, but I'm not finding it, that uses the slogan, come as you are. And I don't think it's Aberdeen, which would be appropriate. And it's like, what other places can I not come than I am?
Richland.
Okay. I need to grow the animal mustache by the time we go.
It was so incredible. I was just like, where the fuck? fuck am I? How has this happened to Richland? The restaurants, it was bonkers. So, because there are nice restaurants in Walla Walla also, if that's what you're looking for. It's like a wine town, right? But somehow they've got the burger places that I want. They've got nice restaurants. The hotel that I was staying at, there was like a steakhouse that had like a trolley car that you could sit in, like the old spaghetti factory back in the day. I wanted to go there so bad. If I would have had more time, I would have been like, we're eating at this place.
Aberdeen, for the record, does have a come as you are sign, but this is many years old. I saw a slogan on a billboard much more recently than this. So I don't know. We'll get to the bottom of it.
So the other thing.
Okay.
That it's around the 4th of July. And for some reason, every single year, it starts at Darlington County. But I listen to Bruce Springsteen so much around. And he's been in the news lately, obviously. Did you watch the trailer, by the way, for the movie?
I did watch the trailer.
I'm not going to lie. It looks truly awful to me.
Yeah, I was going to say. It didn't seem great. I had some notes.
I like Jeremy Allen White. I'm maybe like a little bit annoyed with... I've kind of had enough of Jeremy Allen White, but I like the idea of him as Bruce Springsteen, but I'm like, he really seems very put upon in the trailer. That's like the only way that I could describe it.
That seems fair. Yeah.
It's very Nebraska heavy, which I don't know.
That's what this is about.
Which is not a complaint necessarily, but like the whole thing just seems quite strange to me overall.
I'm not disputing it.
We went to the Biggie one back in the day. Correct. Rock biopic. I am deeply against rock biopics. It is not a thing I'm interested in.
I think discussed on the podcast. You watched the
Bob Dylan one.
Yes.
What is the word when you glorify like casted something?
I'm sorry, what?
Like castigration, something like that. There's a word to describe this that I'm not thinking of right now, but basically where you like glorify something. And look, Bruce Springsteen deserves all the accolades that Bruce Springsteen can get. This is not necessarily a complaint, but the idea of turning these moments that are like situational and complicated into like a movie, you know, like the real aspects of it get lost, I feel like.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Even in this, so I was explaining to the children, I was like, Bruce Springsteen was just so upset for so many, basically like Born to Run came out. I don't think, and then you look at the sequence of records that he put out after that, even on the songs that are hypothetically like upbeat songs, Working on the Highway, like it starts with him working on the highway as like a road worker and ends with him working on the highway as part of like a prison gang. In like Correct. 4 minutes, like how that transition happens, right? Obviously, like we all know about Born in the USA. You listen to it and you're like, Born in the USA, great. And I'm like, I feel like what he is talking about when he does the Born in the USA thing is basically he's talking about the like lie of American upward mobility, you know? Like it's not, it is an anthem, but it's almost like an insult to the American dream.
Of course.
Specifically. And Bruce is constantly talking on how the American dream is dead.
And in the context of, yeah, or how the United States has failed its citizens, yes. The American dream.
This motherfucker was talking about that in 1978. And I'm like, I was like, wow, he'd be so pissed if he was, wait.
Well, goodness. Good news. Because let me tell you, with a lot of people that were pissed about things in 1978, it has not gone that direction.
No, that's Bruce is a real one. Bruce is to his core. So anyway, we're listening to, I'm pulling out, because we just have CDs in the van, right? And I couldn't find the Born in the USA CD. So what I did was I pulled out Bruce Springsteen Live 1975 to 1985. Hello!
Okay.
Because the children needed to hear some talking. And it is like, I don't think I've listened to him intro The River and not gotten chills a single time in my life. It's just
I watched the Springsteen Just the Stories.
Did you actually watch that? I told the children that's what it was.
The SNL sketch.
Ben Stiller. Yeah. But I told the children that that's, I think that might have been, was that on SNL or is that on the Ben Stiller show? Or
it's originally from the Ben Stiller show. It then, where I became aware of it was when he did it on SNL.
So I was like, kids, I was like, we can either listen to this. We listen to The Low End Theory by A Tribe Called Quest first. And like, great record. I keep pausing it to like add context to things. And I'm like, here's New York rap in this time period. And like, literally, like, Q-Tip is just constantly talking on that record about other artists. He keeps shouting out other artists from New York rap from the early 90s and who are like 99% mostly irrelevant now. But it's kind of interesting. So I'm like explaining context for all of these things. And I'm like talking about how jazz music sort of evolved over time into hip hop, like the inspiration between the two.
Wait, by the way, are you familiar with the Sam Presti jazz hip hop album?
I saw the thing and I am not surprised by it. I've seen him. That man has had a soul patch in his life.
I can't say I've ever seen him with a soul patch, but
But I
I
just
also
know that he has. He's had
haven't
one.
confirmed. We're watching some Top Chef Seattle right now, and Tom Colicchio's got the soul patch going.
Does he? Is that new or is that older one?
No, it's from 2012.
Okay, so Bruce Springsteen Live 1975 to 1985. And the children are like, what record is this song on or whatever? And I'm like, well, there are two albums before Bruce like blew up. And like it's by modern standards, they'd be like the greatest selling records of the year or something. But to the larger masses, Bruce was fairly like smaller artist. He wasn't the biggest artist in the world. And so I was like, Greetings from Asbury Park, New Jersey, The Wild Innocent and the East Street Shuffle. And then I'm talking about it, and not to be all like, you know who else? And I was like, Bruce Springsteen is the spiritual predecessor to Kendrick Lamar.
Huh. Wow. You cooked on that one.
Because I can
It's
straight up walk you through it.
too bad Springsteen never had a beef and performed one of his songs in the at the Super Bowl. That would have been quite a moment. I mean, I guess actually he currently is having the beef. He just hasn't done the song yet and has not performed it at any Super Bowls. I don't know if the NFL would go with that one.
So, okay, Kendrick has two records before Kendrick is massive, right? There's Overly Dedicated, and then there's Section 80. There's like a hit on Section 80 legitimately, right? And like Bruce has hits from the early albums. It's not like they're like tiny songs, but like Blinded by the Light, obviously Man for Man, but
Yes, I
like
was
it's
going to
like,
say he had Manfred Mann ahead.
but like I think if you look back, there are songs that were probably bigger, Spirit in the Night or whatever, growing up or whatever. Like there's songs that were probably bigger than we give them credit for just because of how big the later Bruce songs became.
Yeah.
And it's the same with ADHD. You know what I mean? Like if Kendrick never has the bigger albums after that, maybe like ADHD is like what he's known for, So I'm like, those are kind of like they match up almost precisely, right? A lot of hype beforehand. And then he does it. He has the record, Good Kid, Mad City, Born to Run, still like probably the most important record. Not necessarily the biggest, but the most important record that each of them put out. And then like they get a little bit more experimental and creative with what they're doing after that, right? So it's like To Pimp a Butterfly. And I'm like, it's easily as Darkness on the Edge Down. It's not even close. You know what I mean? Like that's the one that if you're a real one, you're like To Pimp a Butterfly, that's the best Kendrick record. Same with Darkness on the Edge Down. That's it. Where you're like, I know this doesn't have the hits on it in the same way. That is the album. It's like they match up so closely in those two. Then it's like you go to The River and Damn, and you're like, huge hits, maybe not as critically acclaimed, a little bit of like figuring out where they are in the world as artists. As having broken through, but establishing themselves as kind of like they're doing their thing. It's a little bit similar to what they did before. Then they get a little bit experimental, right? You have Mr. Morale, and then you have Nebraska. Mr. Morale is not quite Nebraska,
I don't
I
think
will
anything
say,
is Nebraska.
but it would be hard for a hip hop album to be that. But
True.
Kendrick had to tear it down for a second, right? Like he wasn't the biggest artist in the world in that moment. With Mr. Morale. He was on a concept, and he was on a concept that wasn't the same as a lot of rappers were on, in the same way that Bruce, as the biggest artist in the world, was not like people as the biggest artist in the world weren't releasing Nebraska. Obviously, Jeremy Allen White will tell us all about it. Then, after that comes, and we are literally in this moment. You could feel it. Kendrick Lamar will never be as big as he is today. Today is the moment that Kendrick Lamar is the biggest artist he will ever be in his entire life. And every single day after this, he will be less big because he cannot be any bigger. In the same way, Born in the USA, GNX, right? The biggest hits of their, obviously Kendrick has like the single outside of it, but I'm considering Not Like Us in the GNX era. And same with Bruce, right? Born in the USA is not Bruce's best record, but it has Bruce's biggest hits. And those two at the same time, Bruce literally Born in the USA, never will be. Jeremy Allen, they talk about it. They're like, he's going to tear it down and then he's going to be the biggest artist in the world, right? In the trailer, that is the exact thing. They match up almost precisely. And Bruce never again was as big as he was on Born in the USA. It wasn't his creative peak, but it was his cultural peak. And
it was his apex mountain.
Yeah, that was it. Apex mountain for the both of them. And the thing that is the most similar about them, it's like Kendrick isn't fun music, right? Like when you look at Born in the USA is the biggest Bruce song. Probably is. It's a song where you're like, I like the song. I like listening to it. They Not Like Us. They not like us. He's rapping about another rapper being a pedophile on a song. This is not like there's no fun aspects to it when you really, really get down to it.
And yet.
Both became anthems for presidential elections, too.
Yeah.
Is that interesting? But songs where you're like, this is like if you really want to break it down for Kamala, talk about the context and everything. It's like this is kind of weird when you think about it, especially when you see the white dude on TikTok rapping along to it. And you see the Republicans singing along to Born in the USA, it's a little strange. And the same way, my favorite Kendrick line of all time, where he's like, old soul, I probably built them pyramids. And I'm just like, you fucking did it, Kendrick. God damn. Because when he talks about himself, when he's an old soul, he looks at himself as a slave. He doesn't talk about himself as a king in the past tense. That's who Kendrick sees himself as, in the same way that Bruce always, despite being the biggest artist in the entire world, sees himself as the person going to work every day, struggling, not being able to find a job because at the refinery, things like that. It is almost precisely the same how their careers have evolved, and it is shocking.
I look forward to your presentation about this at some music festival. Like,
imagine
festival.
Breaking that down to children in the gardens being like, okay.
Well, if any children were going to get it, it is your children.
Let me tell you one last thing for this trip, though. So we took 410 across because 90 was so trafficked. Have you ever done this where you drive like through Mount Rainier?
No.
Strange times getting off at a rest stop at Mount Rainier because of the other cultural thing happening, seeing signs for it. But I literally, for the first time in my entire life, drove by a car that was actively on fire.
Huh.
And so it's like a two-lane road, or I guess four-lane road, I suppose. There were two lanes that you're going in each direction. And there was a car just ablaze happening. We happened to be there right after it caught on fire. And I drove through there so fast because I was like, I've played GTA. This motherfucker might blow up. And everybody was out of it. It seems like everybody is safe. The car definitely burnt to a crisp. And there were only like three or four cars. Like people were starting. Then we kept seeing all the like rangers driving down the mountain to go check on it. But it was a wild situation. I was like, we got to get through here quickly. And then people who are behind us who also are driving east were like, we saw the car being like in like a burnt shell being put on a tow truck. But it was the thing where I was like, I did not know this is the thing that could actually happen. So that was kind of shocking. Anyway, it's a fun trip. Like you go up over Mount Rainier and then you end up in Yakima. You come down and you're like, I'm in Yakima somehow.
Huh. How much longer was it?
Well, it was faster because of the traffic.
Well, okay.
Really,
how much
drive to Walla
Walla,
I don't, it's like only probably like a 30-minute difference.
And you're getting this, I mean, you're starting much farther, I guess you're not really far that much farther south, but much farther east.
I didn't, if I would have gone on 18 up to 90, there's a bunch of traffic at that interchange.
Oh, I know that interchange.
Do you, I mean, I'm on it all the time now, but like, if we would have done that, it would have taken a long time. It's just kind of fun to drive. Like when you're driving through like Enumclaw and those places over to Mount Rainier, it's a pretty fun drive. And then you get toward Mount Rainier and it's like, you're kind of in the middle of nowhere down there. But I think all told, like I can look it up right now. Here, I'll.
Oh, this is great podcasting. You should definitely do this. Yeah. An
Walla
hour and
Walla
whatever into this episode.
from my house is, yeah, it's 414 on the like I-90 route and 447 on the other route. So it's not that huge of a difference. It's a 30 minute difference, but I will say it was way more scenic on the 410 route. And with there's traffic on 90, I was kind of shocked that it took us on it. So it's pretty fun.
There you go. On that note.
Thanks for listening. This has basically just become a segment where we just talk.
It has,
We've
yes.
invented a podcast. The post-podcast talk is us inventing a podcast. Thanks for listening.